Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be doing part two of three of what I am now calling the Lab Rats series. It's about a professor running out of test research subjects on an island. So links will be in the description to part one. I hope you enjoy this story. Shout out to Trash Tia for writing such an awesome series. Let's get started. July 2020. Ever since my colleagues and I became unwilling test subjects in my psychotic professor's experiments and awakening the supernatural, we have had multiple people trying to hunt us down. Whether they were renowned scientists desperate for the serum for themselves, or random people obsessed with cutting us open and seeing how we ticked, these guys didn't care that we were human beings, that we were ex-researchers ourselves. They wanted us dead or alive, in pieces, or splattered across concrete. As long as they got that precious serum dripping from our frontal lobe, they didn't give a damn. There were varieties of hunters. Some of them tried to play nice with their own nefarious agenda, while others were completely insane. Like the ones who saw us as a mistake, a curse sent from God to end humanity as we know it. Yeah, they thought we were the next coming of the Antichrist. Have you ever been stripped completely naked and forced to bathe in salt water for 3 days without food and water? That is when I lost my will to fight. I still remember the sensation of flames licking at my feet, rope wrapped around my wrists, pinning me to a tree. They wanted me to admit I was a monster, that I was a curse from the devil and belonged in hellfire. I'll spend this post elaborating on what exactly our professor did to us and the burden forced onto our backs, but I will say it saved us at points. For example, the freaks who tried to cleanse us in salt water and then burn us under a full moon got their comeuppance. 2020 is probably a year in your lives which didn't feel real. You were locked inside and you probably compared what was happening to a movie. We had a similar problem, but while you were struggling through lockdown, trying to fight a wave spreading globally, we found ourselves with bounties on our heads because we were no longer human to these bastards, and to them, anything went. Which was bad news for our professor who had fought to keep his research as private as possible, choosing to show only a select group with shiny money bags for eyes. Turns out, no matter how much you think you're hiding something, it will always be leaked. And people will find out. Bad people. The kinds of people in all of my favorite movies as a kid. You know, the evil, trigger-happy British guy obsessed with finding buried treasure? Him. But tenfold. I might have felt special about the multi-billion price tag on me, but knowing all they wanted me for was to dissect and slice me apart like meat to the slaughter? Yeah, I can't say I was thrilled to have so many people after our little group. 2020 was the year when people stopped being human, stopped trying to be human, all morality down the drain. Of these certain groups trying to capture us, there was a specific one which I will always remember. Seth's gang. I'll remember them because it was the first time I realized my colleagues and I weren't human anymore, and maybe the freaks trying to label us as the devil's children were right. There were a lot of people after us, as I said, but Seth and his gang, however, just wanted us for the sake of gloating. After hearing of our professor's experiments, these guys decided they didn't want the serum or the research. They just wanted us. For what? I still don't know. They weren't scientists or in the medical field. They definitely weren't at the auction. I would have seen them. I'm pretty sure these were just ordinary guys seeing as nothing but trophies to parade around. I don't think they knew the significance of the serum or the danger of it. They saw something shiny and thought, to hell with it. Which, I guess, looking back, was why we were always 2 steps ahead despite having 9mm Glocks shoved in our faces. The hotel room we were being held in was a step up from the cage I've been trapped inside in the lab for the last several months. It actually had aircon. Sitting blindfolded on the edge of a queen-sized bed, wearing the same clothes which were practically glued to my flesh, the grays of cool air brushing the back of my neck and relieving blistering skin was euphoric. I hadn't had a proper shower in weeks, maybe months. It was the first time in a long while I actually felt human. Even when my wrists were pinned behind my back, a slab of duct tape suffocating my mouth and nose. Now, I wasn't completely sure, but I wondered if there was a duct tape shortage on the island. After being kidnapped and held in multiple places, I'd never been gagged with duct tape. It was always filthy clothing fashioned into a makeshift gag, or ties and shoelaces. I will never forget some guy stuffing a pair of panties in my mouth. Seth's gang were the first to actually have duct tape and proper blindfolds. I sensed the front man's footsteps as he paced in front of us. Despite being blindfolded, I knew he had a gun tucked into his belt, a dagger strapped to his ankle, and a grenade for emergencies. I wasn't sure what emergencies would justify blowing up a fancy hotel room. Next to me, Riss was practically vibrating with fury. She knew not to act on her fear, because when we did, bad stuff happened. But Riss was a different breed. She didn't listen to me when we were human, and definitely didn't listen to me when we were freakish experiments contorted into something resembling a human. No matter how many times I nudged her with reassurance, she inched away from me like I had the plague. "Project Mildew, huh?" The front man had one hell of an Aussie accent. Without my sight, the rest of my senses were expanding, igniting. Smell. I could smell the stink of myself, body odor and filth caked into my skin. Taste. There was copper in my throat and coating my teeth and tongue. Every step the man made, I felt a prickling in my bones. I sensed him crouching in front of Kion, who, thankfully, didn't move. I was waiting for him to. If I concentrated, I could feel the air crackling with electricity, the hairs on the back of my neck and arms standing up. Just being shoulder to shoulder with my colleague allowed me to feel exactly what he was feeling. And like Riss, the guy was dangerously close to blowing a fuse. Kion wasn't stupid, though. If we did something, he knew the consequences of that something. And none of us wanted that. So, staying quiet and submissive it was. "Alex Quincy's diamonds." The front man flicked me in the forehead, and I had to squeeze my eyes shut to avoid going into sensory overload. He continued in a sing-song voice, his steps becoming playful, like he was dancing. Every so often, I sensed his fingers wrapping around his 9mm. Maybe he wasn't as stupid as I initially thought. "Project Mildew," he repeated. "You look better on camera." Riss scoffed under her gag. I don't think this guy understood that on camera we were still human. It's not like I was planning on going to a fashion show, but the shorts and t-shirt combo I had been wearing for weeks were comfortable. Another step. Holding my breath, I gripped the ropes entangling my wrists and prayed they were physical enough to be an anchor. "The tests who became the tested," he continued. "Oh man, I've heard about you. You're famous here. Professor Quincy's human lab rats, and successful ones too. You've got a lot of eyes on you, ain't you? Too bad we got you first." "Yeah, that's right. We got here first." The guy laughed, and I felt both Riss and Kion start to tremble. Hell, not now. I had to keep them at bay, even when my methods weren't exactly stellar. I had to keep them from plunging. The rope around my wrists wasn't too tight, and I knew I'd be able to get out of it easily. But that would require strength and energy, which was sure a trigger. There were a lot of triggers. Anger and pain. Sometimes even happiness. It turned out basic human emotions was what this thing thrived off. So to avoid us going nuclear, I had to stay stoic. No matter how much I wanted to tear off this guy's face, I had to keep myself together. It only took one slip up before things got really damn brutal, really fast. I wasn't surprised my colleagues were losing control. Seth was quite the character, almost like a cartoon villain. "Damn. I've been looking for god dogs, and I don't think we've found something better, eh?" His palmy fingers wandered where they shouldn't have, grazing over my left breast and delving under my shirt, causing my body to seize up, and then relaxing slightly when he pulled off my blindfold. Blinking rapidly, I found myself eye to eye with the guy who had snatched us from the lab and thrown us in the back of his truck. I only got glimpses of him during our kidnapping, thanks to the ski mask covering his face. Now I was looking at a man who was maybe in his early 30s, with a balding head and a vicious cartoon smile twisted with mania. His eyes glinted when I found myself shuffling back, my gaze flashing to the Glock strapped to his side, Seth pulling off the other's blindfolds. "Now, I don't want any funny business, alright? I watched that conference and I know what you can do." He stuck the barrel of his 9mm into my right temple, and next to me, Kion ducked his head. "I'm watching you, sweetheart." Seth's smile widened into a sickening grin. "If you start any weird crap, I'll blow your brains out." I did my best to nod, and he ripped the tape off of our mouths, too. "All right," Seth straightened up, eyeing us like we were hunks of meat. Nice to meet you. I'll be looking after you guys from now on.
Looking after us? I spoke up, my voice gravelly. You mean you'll be cutting into us and selling our brains on the black market?
Seth laughed like a damn hyena.
What?
He scratched the back of his head with his gun.
Nah, that's messed up. We just want dogs.
The man's smile dampened, however, when his gaze settled on Kion. Gesturing to my colleague with his gun, he scowled.
What's wrong with him? Did Quincy rip out the guy's tongue?
Before I could answer, Seth crouched in front of Kion with narrowed eyes.
You all spoke at the conference? He murmured.
Sure, your professor forced you. But you introduced yourselves?
All of you did, even your fourth.
His smile curled.
All except him.
Damn. A shiver ripped its way down my spine when Seth shot out a finger and pointed at my colleague, and my mouth started to dry up. Kion was perfectly reading his lips, every word curled under his tongue, his eyes flicking back and forth to drink in each one, and each word brought more heat, brought more goosebumps, pricking on my arms and legs. Kion's body pressed against mine was overheating. I could feel the sensation coming over my body, like a wave of pressure. Wrists made a squeaking noise, and I concentrated on Seth, who didn't seem to notice it. Come to realize, whether you are human, an animal, or a badly messed up experiment created in a lab, it doesn't matter what you're capable of. If you initially appear weak and powerless, the stronger will single you out. Seth was enjoying himself so much he didn't realize the skin on his cheeks started to crack from all the moisture being sucked from the air. Kion didn't move or speak, and that seemed to thrill him even more.
Speak, Seth snarled, leaning closer until he was inches away from my colleague's face.
Speak! He's deaf, I gritted out.
Seth's eyes darkened.
Deaf, huh? Well, he better be worth it.
Kion didn't flinch when the man grabbed him by the hair and yanked his head back. He was completely stoic, like a puppet severed from his strings, allowing this guy to stick his Glock between his eyes. I noticed the air move slightly around us, blurring and then coming together. There was a blink and you'll miss it moment, and I spent months being taught how to notice it.
$3.5 million each, hmm?
Seth said in a breath, dragging the butt of his gun down my colleague's face, grazing it across the flesh of his neck.
I don't remember paying for a damn mute. You can learn to talk, kid.
Again, Kion didn't even acknowledge the man, and that infuriated him even more.
Hey!
Seth grabbed his jaw, forcing Kion to look at him.
Are you listening to me? Open your mouth! You either speak or you die. And like I said, I didn't pay $500,000 each for a mute.
Riss must have noticed the significant change in the air and temperature. Between the two of us, it was our job to stop Kion from plunging.
You didn't spend crap on us!
She spoke up with a hiss. Riss was already panicked and that wasn't good.
You took us from the lab while everyone else was at the auction because you couldn't afford us, which makes me wonder how you afforded this fancy 5-star hotel.
I had to swallow a yell. I wanted her to stall, not give the guy a reason to start going trigger happy. Seth's narrowed eyes found Riss's.
Your professor and I had an agreement, sweetheart, he said. How about I blow your brains out, huh? Since you like speaking out of 10, and I don't like my doggies speaking out of 10.
As Seth moved close to her, I sensed Riss freaking out. It was too early for her to start the plunge, but she was the most unpredictable out of the four of us. Just like when she was human, her emotions were all over the place. Still though, she maintained a scowl and refused to move when Seth was practically eye to eye with her, hot breath grazing her cheeks. The man prodded her in her right temple.
I bet you're filled to the brim with all that fancy-ass Quincy serum.
He dragged his filthy finger down her cheek and she squeaked. I'm pretty sure I can just crack you open and take it for myself.
Then,
Riss swallowed, choking on her words. I nudged her again, this time enough to shake the bed, but she wasn't looking at me, her eyes starting to lose vacancy. Next to me, I knew the same thing was happening to Kion, but I wouldn't look at him yet. If I did, I would lose it myself.
Then you'll be losing valuable cargo.
I was surprised when her lips broke out into an equally psychotic grin. I had no doubt the plunge was taking hold of her. She leaned back almost casually and the air seemed to move around her, seeping into her skin and taking an unyielding hold.
Considering the lengths you took to capture all of us, I doubt you want that. You're all bark with no bite, douche.
Riss, I said through my teeth, at the exact same time as the aircon behind us blew a fuse and crashed to the ground.
Shut up.
The plunge started to show, but even when it was barely a prickle in the air, it was already beginning its slow purging of every particle. I watched a mosquito that had been in mid-flight towards the fancy-looking lamp on the nightstand bleed into invisible folds of energy, which were becoming progressively more visible to the naked eye the more my friends plunged. I could see it perfectly, like the world around us was beginning to splinter apart. Ignoring Riss, who could stand up for herself, Seth's attention went back to Kion, who couldn't. Or at least, that was his facade. Kion had been labeled the most dangerous out of all of Quincy's experiments, but it wasn't just because of the plunge.
"I'm talking to you," Seth prodded my colleague's chest, and a wave of heat slammed into me, stealing my breath away.
I watched, knowing it was all going to be over in a matter of seconds. The front man grabbed my colleague by the collar of his shirt and yanked him violently to his feet.
"You've got 2 seconds to speak," he spat, before slamming the butt of his gun into Kion's head.
"Speak, or I'll give you a frontal lobotomy." Seth continued in seething breaths and got closer and closer, failing to notice he was already losing. But so were we.
His lips split into a grin. "Speak, or I start asking questions, like why I bought 4 of you and there are 3 of you."
He poked the metal prong sticking from Kion's head. I like to call them horns to make them sound cooler, but in reality, they were agonizing when I was human. 2 pieces of metal drilled directly into the top of the skull. They'd been a part of me for a while, but I wasn't going to forget how they had been forcefully inserted into my skull. And while I screamed,
"3 little freaks,"
Seth's lips were practically kissing my colleague's temple. He prodded the metal horns and Kion's lip twitched.
"Without the 4th.
That struck a chord in both of them, and I knew if I didn't do something, like right then, a fate worse than death awaited all of us.
"Leave him alone."
I found my voice tangled in my throat, but I could barely bring myself to speak. I felt like I was being suffocated by 2 separate energies around me slowly but surely ripping atoms apart. In the corner of my eye, things were starting to melt into the ground, disappearing completely. The carpet in the room was suddenly singed black and the wave continued, slicing off the tips of my hair I had only just managed to grow back.
"He can't hear you, douche," I said through lingering breaths. "Professor Quincy said he was deaf."
"Deaf?" Seth let out a belly laugh. "He's my new god dog and he's expected to bark." His lips curled.
"Now speak."
A second went by, then another. Absent-mindedly, I licked the taste of rusty coins from the corner of my lip.
"I said speak."
Seth slammed the butt of his gun into my colleague's face again, but this time his words broke apart in his throat. I sensed every individual letter shattering into pieces when his body was flung back by an invisible force. I knew that invisible force. I knew the phantom fingers wrapping around his throat and slamming the man into the wall until he was screaming, begging, his feet hovering several feet from the ground. Kion didn't even have to pull apart his restraints. Riss was already screaming. Turning to my colleague, her hands were free and she was signing desperately.
"Don't."
Her eyes were wide, lips twisted, because she knew exactly what would follow. Seth, somehow, managed a spluttered laugh between broken teeth like tiny yellow chiclets sticking from his mouth.
"Oh, you don't like that, do you?"
More brilliant red spurtled like a fountain, and yet the guy kept laughing.
"Look at you. Quincy didn't hold back on you, did he?"
I'm not saying my colleague enjoyed crushing Seth's windpipe without even lifting a finger, but that is exactly what I am saying. And like it thrilled him, the idea of death, the idea of dying at the hands of a supernatural force, Seth continued to roar with laughter. My colleague was pressing pressure points which shouldn't be pressed, especially pressure points in a genetically messed up man whose trauma had turned him into the wild card of our group. The amount of stuff we had all gone through inside Quincy's lab was enough to send us into insanity, except my colleague, according to Quincy, hadn't responded correctly at the beginning, and being a researcher myself with rabbits before I became a lab rat, I knew the only way to get results was to cause pain. I never initiated the pain in the rabbits, but I was an enabler. I watched my professor torture these subjects to make sure they were prepped and ready for the serum. Maybe our karma was that the exact same happened to us, but to Kion, it was on a much larger scale. I was never briefed on what exactly happened to him during the months from March to June, though it was obvious he had had it the worst. I didn't know why. I didn't understand why his brain was different, or maybe he was more resilient. He had been better at fighting it. Kion hated two things: being kidnapped and said kidnappers mentioning our fourth member. And it was those things which made him plunge, which made him lose all sense of humanity and morality and emotion, essentially turning him into a mindless beast. That was one half of the plunge.
"Do you want me to say his name?"
Seth coughed up spattered scarlet, and I could already see what was happening to him. Kion had done enough damage externally. Internally, however, that was another story. Internally, I sensed every organ starting to peel apart and splinter, bursting into nothing. It started with pressure on his heart, which was slow and dragged, so he felt everything. Then the brain began to expand. When blood ran in sharp rivulets from every orifice, and Seth screamed, howling like an animal, I looked away, just in time for the rest of the man's body to pop like a balloon, and a chunk of his skull to land right in front of me. Riss started screaming, and I was half aware of a slight taint of warm blood like paint splattering the side of my face. When I twisted back to look at him, his body was still hovering without a head, a skeletal hand lifting and waving at us. Riss dropped to her knees, her head in her hands, trembling, and I followed her, trying to get some semblance of control.
"It's been a week,"
Riss whispered, sobbing, swiping at her eyes with bloody hands making them worse.
"Oh God, what if I was right? What if we're too late? I knew this was a bad idea, but no one listens to Riss. I knew he wouldn't come. Oh, I just knew it."
"Calm down," I said. "Concentrate on happy birthday, okay? Do you want me to sing it with you?" Riss sputtered.
"We're going to die," she sang. "Can you feel it? I'm plunging, Ren. God, it feels so damn good."
She knocked her head into the wall with crazy eyes. It took exactly half a second for our brains to decide whether we were going to fight it or give in.
"Hey, Riss,"
I spoke in reassuring hisses, grasping her shoulders and forcing her to look at me.
"Happy birthday,"
I choked out.
"Three times. It has to be three times."
When she didn't respond, I shook her until her cloudy found mine. Riss was plunging, like Kion. The blood vessels in her eyes had popped, her lips cracking apart. If I concentrated, I could see her bare knees starting to melt into air, wisps of her hair starting to disintegrate.
"Do it now!"
I shrieked when Kion finally let go of the man's body, and it hit the ground in front of us like a bad joke.
"Happy birthday!"
I said the mantra over and over again, shaking my colleague until she was responding.
"Three times, Riss. Right now!"
When she shook her head screeching, I grabbed her hands and entangled her fingers with mine.
"I'll start, okay? And you follow me."
To my surprise, Riss nodded, and for the fraction of a second, my colleague, or what was left of her, stopped bleeding into visible particles which were now around us, like a glistening wave of ocean water enveloping us.
"Happy birthday to you,"
I whispered, squeezing her hands tighter, relieved when she repeated the verse. When I was sure Riss was anchoring herself, I turned to Kion, who was sitting cross-legged in front of the mutilated body. My gaze went to the door. It would only be a matter of time before Seth's goons figured out something was wrong, and the last thing I wanted was them to walk in mid-plunge.
"Happy birthday, too,"
I continued, allowing Riss to fill in a name, before focusing on my other colleague. I'm not exaggerating when I say Kion was covered head to toe in blood, like it was his canvas, like he belonged in it. It was too late for him. I could already see that in his vacant and foggy eyes and playful smile that he had accepted the plunge, willingly.
"Gross," Kion sighed, pulling a face.
He turned his nose up at mutilated flesh and bone, and I had a hard time looking him in the eye. I exhaled out a breath.
"Kion,"
I spoke and sighed calmly, but my skin was prickling and scalding. I could feel the flesh on the backs of my hands peeling off.
"Happy birthday."
I made sure to emphasize every word clearly, even when I knew he could read every word from my mouth without even trying. He started to shake his head, and I glimpsed that panic, the trauma of the last several months starting to bloom behind his eyes.
"No, you have to do it," I hissed out. "Look around you," I sighed. "If you don't do it, we're going to plunge."
I was practically slamming my hands together in frustration, but he shook his head, his gaze going nowhere.
"What if I
He paused, signing, his lip curling.
Like it.
Do you know when you know something is wrong, but you keep shoving it to the back of your head until you can't ignore it anymore? Yeah, this was one of those moments. I loved Kion. I loved him like a brother. But there was something about his face, the way he delved his fingers into startling red pooling on the carpet, that made me want to get as far away from him as possible. Swallowing hard, I shook away the thought and grabbed hold of his hand. Once I did, the air around us wavered, and flesh on his cheeks started to flake.
Happy birthday.
Riss, who was sitting with what was left of her knees, pressed to her chest, choked out a sob.
This isn't working, Ren. This isn't working. I can't do this.
When she beat the floor with crumbling fists, the whole room jolted. The ground beneath us shook, and Kion shot me a panicked look. Even plunging, he was still scared, and I didn't blame him. After telling Riss to continue, I managed to smile and signed. Earthquake. My colleague's lips split into an unusual grin, and he mouthed the words, "Yeah, right." With steely eyes, Kion's smile faded, and for once, he looked actually serious. "Jem," he signed, "I don't think he's coming for us." Ignoring a conversation I really didn't want to have, I focused on the body. "Check his pockets," I signed back. "We don't have much time." I pulled out a passport, some Indonesian currency, and an old plane ticket. Checking his phone didn't help. I was just reminded the borders were still shut, and this guy had a whole group chat gloating about his so-called guard dogs.
"Ren!"
When I lifted my head, Riss's wild eyes were flickering around the room, drinking in parts of reality being sucked away. Her mouth became lopsided, lips drooping like my colleague was having a stroke from the pressure building around her. See, I described this in a lot of detail, like this lasted around 5 minutes long, but no, all of this happened in the space of around 2 minutes. When footsteps sounded outside and Kion's head snapped to the door, his eyes darkening, a sour paste crept up my throat. Professor Quincy didn't just take away our humanity, he twisted us into something resembling an animal inside a human body. We spoke and acted, and felt like humans. But once a stranger was nearby, or footsteps on territory we had unknowingly snatched as our own, we turned feral. I already knew Kion was a whole new level of unpredictable and unhinged after what the experiments had done to his brain. But seeing what he was capable of even before the plunge, I froze. The world was coming apart around me and I was plunging, but I couldn't move. I watched him get to his feet, his fingers curling into fists at his sides. The footsteps were closing in on us, getting louder and louder, and Kion could sense every vibration. I could tell with the way his lips twitched, a whole new darkness clouding his eyes and stripping away what was left of his humanity. I had seconds. There was no use in happy birthday. I remember jumping to my feet and diving onto my colleague's back, bringing him to the floor like a lion would a deer. When the two of us hit the ground, I watched Riss rupture in front of me, her face glitching, becoming moving static before her body followed. "Seth?" The voice caused Kion to attempt to wrench out of my grasp, but I had a firm hold of him. The first few weeks of being inhuman, I was taught how to kill people, kill my fellow subjects. Apologizing profusely into hair which smelled of blood and dirt in Quincy's lab, I struggled to keep myself from plunging, knowing the room was already half gone and I was going to get caught in it anyway.
"I'm sorry. I'll make it up to you, okay? You should have sang happy birthday, but you're so stubborn."
I sobbed with what I hoped was reassurance. I knew he and Riss and Jem would do exactly the same to me.
"So stubborn."
I couldn't help myself, nestling my face into his hair and heaving in breaths while my skin started to peel away.
"Just take a deep breath and close your eyes, okay?"
I whispered into his flushed skin.
"We'll find him, Kion. I promise you."
He stopped struggling. And for a moment I thought my colleague was actually listening to me, before the ceiling began to crack apart. The ground rumbled again, and I lost my grip on the guy before forcing him onto his back and straddling his legs. Just when his free arm was flying out with intention to send me crashing into the back wall and ending all reality in that room, encompassing us, I snapped Kion's neck. And with the last of my energy, I screamed, while my own flesh melted from my face, while the plunge enveloped us both. March 2020. It was on the 17th day of captivity inside a cell made of glass panes meant to keep in rabbits, when I met an unlikely visitor. There comes a time when giving up is better than screaming until you have lost all of the breath in your lungs and your throat feels like sandpaper. I hadn't eaten in days, and what was left of my meals, curry and mashed potatoes, painted my cell walls, a real work of art if I concentrated and imagined carving shapes inside congealing potato and day-old curry. So far, I had tests. I had tests which were an invasion of privacy, which I will not expand upon. I had tests where my professor's gloved fingers ran over my scalp and marked places where he was going to insert the same headset on the rabbits. He didn't listen to my cries. He didn't tell me where my colleagues were. I was nothing to him. I was a subject stripped of my rights. So I was doing the little I could to protest, even if it was small. I was refusing to eat. I knew subjects had to eat to stay healthy, to get results. The piece of crap wasn't going to get much further if I died of starvation after days of no eating. How sad. I was on my second day of refusing to eat, and my gut felt like it was folding in on itself. To combat this, I sat against clinical white walls with my knees pressed to my chest and my head buried in my lap. I ignored the rumbling of my stomach and my aching joints, the weird squiggly lines in my vision when I bothered lifting my head. It's weird. In that cage, I was the coldest I've ever felt on an Indonesian island. I didn't remember the temperature affecting the outcome of the rabbit subjects, but maybe it was different for humans. Still though, I had my solace. I imagined standing in glittering water, bioluminescent plankton washing over my bare toes. I imagined the full moon bathing the sky in warm light, and it was enough to make me feel safe, even so far from home, far from normality. If I had squeezed my eyes shut and envisioned wading deeper into the shallows until the water was lapping my thighs, I could calm myself and tell myself to breathe. Then the water was at my waist, the panic subsiding, neck deep, ice-cold water filling my mouth and suffocating my nose. But if I thought past it, if I plunged myself into the deep, I could trick my brain into imagining that I was escaping, swimming across the wide expanse of ocean, all the way back home to my family. I was brought out of my imagination when a scratching noise pulled me back to my senses, and I was back inside my cage. Lifting my head, I searched for someone, but there was nobody there. "Over here, genius," the voice startled me. It wasn't quite a voice, more of an attempt, though I could definitely make out the language bursting out. When my eyes swiveled, I found myself staring at a blur of white. I squinted. No, not just a blur of white, it was Subject 15. The rabbit which had stolen Jem's heart and possibly taken control of his mind. For a moment I tried to blink myself awake, but no matter how many times I pinched myself, the rabbit was still there, pressing its tiny face against the glass, and I can see blood staining its fur. Initially, I thought he was a hallucination, until I blinked, and he was still very much there. He was part of reality, lightly smushing its bloody mouth against glass panes. The sight of dark red tainting its fur twisted my gut, and I had a thought which suddenly wouldn't leave me alone. If the serum did that to the rabbits, what exactly would it do to us? Well, 15's beady eyes found mine, and I swore its rabbit mouth twisted into a grin. Its voice mimicked both me and my colleagues, the perfect imitation of us. I could hear all of us, even the professor, in every curl of its words. It wasn't just intelligent. It was something else. Something monstrous, which should have been put down. No, it never should have been a subject at all. I slowly crawled towards it and held my breath. I must have looked pretty funny to 15. I was the tester who had become the tested, the one who wore the lab coat, to the rat forced into light blue scrubs like clothes sticking to me. I can't say I wasn't curious, though. Baffled. I was inches from a damn talking rabbit, and the last time I checked, rabbits weren't supposed to talk. Their mouths haven't evolved to form words, but somehow it was figuring out speech. 15 was learning fast, but that terrified me. After several attempts at speech, it had almost fully mimicked a human's expression. It cocked its head and in Jem's voice asked, "Well, how does it feel to be the one in the cage?" "You're not real," I told the rabbit, which sounded like Jem. To my shock, it laughed and its bloody mouth almost formed a snarl. "Are you sure about that?" I crawled over to the screen, pressing my hands against glass. "How does..." I licked my lips. "How does what feel?" The rabbit's eyes followed me and I shuffled back, a sour paste creeping its way up my throat.
You were always my least favorite,
it murmured. Its nose twitched.
I think you humans call it karma, and whether you believe in it or not, every action must have an equal reaction.
It moved closer, pressing its face against the glass. I noticed the fur around its mouth was stained red.
You drilled into my head, Ren. You hurt me day after day and hid behind a sense of morality that you were a good person because it was for the good of the human race.
15 edged closer. I wish I could feel sorry for you. I wish I could feel the sympathy you humans use as a pathetic barrier. But aren't you just the cutest? The thing was mimicking my own words from the start of the experiments. I pressed my face against the plastic cage, peering at Subject 15, who was hiding in the corner. Quincy told me to turn off my humanity, but that didn't stop me as seeing them as cute little furry bunnies. It never crossed my mind that 15 could hear exactly what was being said. I thought to a few months back when I had picked it up from its cage and nuzzled its fur.
Aw, isn't he just the cutest?
15 knew the exact moment I gave up, my hand slipping from the glass. It gestured to the band-aid uncomfortably sticking to my scalp.
Nice horns.
You have intelligence, I whispered through a sob. I leaned closer.
Quincy, you need to tell me what he's doing to the others.
You already know what he's planning to do, Ren, the rabbit chuckled, lifting a paw in a mocking wave.
Why are you asking me, What if I am in fact an illusion? You're not eating. Your mind has been played with. Are you sure you're really speaking to a talking rabbit?
It cocked its head.
How do you know I'm not Jem? Or Riss?
Its voice twisted into hers and then the professor's.
I'm losing my mind,
I whispered, pinching the flesh of my bare thighs.
I'm losing my mind.
Maybe, it said. Or you're witnessing the consequences of your actions. You did this to me, if you remember. I told you to stop hurting me, but you didn't hear me, Ren. You never heard me. Only him. And when I was strong enough, I made him force you to finally listen to me.
Jem, I thought hysterically. You little...
I slammed my hands into the glass, unable to resist a snarl when it turned to hop away.
Hey, wait, what did you do to Jem?
I didn't do anything,
the rabbit responded in a scoff.
Your professor, however, have you ever heard of teleportation?
I stared at it blinking rapidly until it laughed.
No, not that kind. I mean the new kind. I'm talking about what Quincy is trying to perfect.
What do you mean?
Think about it.
The rabbit's nose twitched.
What you have been working on and researching, what if it was possible in humans?
I shook my head. There was no way. If Professor Quincy wanted to test on us, it would likely be psychokinesis, which was possible in rabbits.
That's impossible, I managed to grit out.
With rabbits, it's one thing, and it's barely even stable. With humans, it's...
It's barbaric. The rabbit, which went through the procedure and survived, their brains were drastically altered. They were never the same. That's what I wanted to say. I trailed off at the thought of forcing a living and breathing human to shatter apart into atoms and forcefully move from one place to another. I remembered Subject 12. The tiny little thing coming apart slowly, piece by piece. A mixture of fur, blood, and bones filling its cage. No way. There was no way my psycho professor would attempt it in humans. The rabbit hopped away.
Well, you're dumber than I thought. I guess I'll be going if you're just going to look at me like that.
When I thought it was going to leave, the furry little crap twisted its head.
Do you want to know a secret?
It hopped right over to the glass.
Come closer, and I'll tell you.
I want you to get really close so I can see how adorable you are.
Too desperate to feel humiliated, I swallowed a shriek and pressed my ear to the glass.
Jem was first.
The rabbit started to say, but was cut off by the speaker above me crackling, a familiar voice slicing into my ears.
Good morning. I will be with you shortly. I would like you to raise your hands above your head. I will be administering a gas.
At the corner of my eye, 15 was disappearing behind the corner, and I let out a frustrated hiss.
Professor Quincy!
I managed to force my voice into a professional voice, despite the rabbit's voice in my mind. Jem was the first to what? I hadn't seen either of my colleagues in weeks, or heard from them. I swallowed hard.
Professor Quincy, Subject 15 is on the premises and is showing signs of heightened intelligence.
the rabbit tisked.
And to think I was going to help you. Good luck with the experiments. I will have a front row seat.
Before it left me in puddling static, however, the rabbit didn't hesitate to drop a bombshell which sent me crumpling to my knees. Oh yeah, I forgot to say. Subject 15's words slammed into me as I was choked again, with gas filling my mouth and nose. Jem was the first to die, it said in a sing-song symphony of all of our voices. And you don't even know the best part. And that's the end of this part. I really hope you're enjoying this series so far. If you are, let me know. Subscribe, you know, comments, likes, stuff like that. If you dislike it, though, I will find you. Just kidding, FBI. That was a joke. If you're anywhere else, I'm not sure what your options are, but hey, I just appreciate you listening. Hope you enjoyed yourself. Come join our Discord, though, if you'd like to come hang out. It's not too bad, not too busy, so it'd be nice to have you. If you'd like to support this channel more and keep these series coming and help the channel grow, well, there's a Patreon for that, and I appreciate all of my Patreon members for your generosity. Thank you. If you'd like to send me your story, go to storiesaftermidnight.com where you can do so. And with that said, we'll see you in the next one.